Hello and welcome to the Snow Christensen and Martineau Counselor's Corner, a podcast dedicated to keeping you up to speed with the ever-changing legal landscape. This podcast is brought to you by Snow Christensen and Martineau, a full-service law firm located here in Salt Lake City that has been serving clients for over 125 years.
Good afternoon. We're here for the Snow Christensen and Martineau Counselor's Corner podcast. This afternoon, we're going to be discussing mediating civil rights cases against police officers. My name is Scott Young. I'm a lawyer at Snow Christensen and Martineau. I've been in practice for 13 years, and I have spent most of that time litigating civil rights cases, often involving police officers. Mediating civil rights cases is different than typical tort cases, and we want to go through some of the factors today that come into play in civil rights cases that are a little bit different, both from the plaintiff's side and from the defendant's side. So the way we're going to go about this today, we'll talk about some of the general differences between a standard personal injury case and a civil rights case, and then we'll talk about some of the differences for a plaintiff in a mediation and some of the differences for a defendant. This is important because from March 31st, 2014 to March 31st, 2015, there were over 35,000 civil rights cases filed in federal district courts across the United States. So let's start out. The first general factor that impacts both sides to a mediation in these cases is just the nature of the claim. In a civil rights case against a police officer, it's typically an unreasonable seizure or a use of excessive force. But the way the plaintiffs typically view that is that the government, and specifically the police force who is charged with the duty of protecting them, has exerted a use of force that violated the very document, the Constitution, that gives them their rights. Or with an unreasonable seizure, they were seized by the government in violation of that. And so it can be a very personal feeling for a plaintiff. The same goes for a defendant. Police officer is an honorable profession. Most of the men and women who get into the profession do so out of a sense of duty. And to be accused of violating the Constitution raises the emotional stakes. The second general factor that comes into play is the venue. There's an old truism that venue determines the victor, and venue is very critical in civil rights cases. An important example in this arena is the 1994 O.J. Simpson trial, and Frontline, the documentary program on PBS, did a special on this in 2005, and they interviewed one of the prosecutors, William Hodgman, and he said, quote, "We could have very well filed the case in Santa Monica, and if we could have done something differently to avoid all the grief that flowed thereafter, it would have been smarter for our office to have filed the case in Santa Monica," unquote. I think that's telling that 10 years after the trial, upon reflection, the most important thing wasn't the evidence. It wasn't about how they discussed DNA or the credibility of Mark Furman or what have you. It was where the case was filed. And venue is very critical in assessing risks in any civil rights case. Similar to that is the cultural climate. And it's worth noting that Gallup recently conducted a survey that indicated that people's trust across the country in police officers has decreased from 2004 to 2007. So the cultural climate also can raise or lower the risk, and it's something that both plaintiffs and defendants need to be aware of in civil rights litigation. The next factor is the stress of litigation. I thought this was a fascinating study out of DePaul University. They basically measured people's stress and so forth when they were involved in litigation, and this wasn't specific to civil rights. It's just litigation generally, and the increase in stress, excuse me, is significant. It's more significant than I think most people think. I think most people expect litigation to be stressful. They just don't realize how stressful it is. Well, how stressful is it? The DePaul study found, quote, "Our earlier study showed that ongoing litigation was a strong predictor of PTSD at 1 year," unquote. So this study found that the stress of litigation is akin to PTSD. It shouldn't be underestimated. Okay, I want to talk briefly about pressure points on plaintiffs in civil rights cases that are important in mediation. The first one is the high standard for constitutional violations. The Supreme Court's been very clear that uses of force are not to be judged with 20/20 hindsight, and they're judged with an objective standard. So it doesn't matter what the officer's subjective motivations may or may not have been. The standard alone is high, but the second part of that is that for individual officers, there's the defense of qualified immunity. And in order for a plaintiff, well, first of all, the plaintiff bears the burden of overcoming qualified immunity, and they have to show that not only was there a violation, but that the officer's conduct violated clearly established law at the time. Now, this is an interesting topic right now for two reasons. One, since 2015, the Supreme Court has issued four rulings reversing circuit courts of appeals who found that the clearly established prong had been satisfied by the plaintiff. So in other words, the Supreme Court has said to circuit courts across the country, no, you've set the bar too low and the bar needs to be higher and officers need to be immune. So that presents a significant hurdle going forward for plaintiffs. The second part of that is a qualified immunity decision may be immediately appealable. That is, if a district court rules on a motion to dismiss or a motion for summary judgment that qualified immunity doesn't apply, then the officer can immediately appeal that to a circuit court of appeal. This can extend the length of time for any recovery, which is always a critical part of any mediation or settlement negotiation. The third point for plaintiffs is the difficulty in proving a custom or policy, which is required if they are going to pursue a claim against the entity itself. So the reason that is so difficult is because each situation, each use of force or seizure arises under different facts, and that can be very time-consuming and expensive to go through evidence and show enough similar situations to establish a municipal custom or policy. Another factor is offers of judgment. Under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 68, a defendant can make an offer of judgment, and if the plaintiff doesn't accept the offer and doesn't recover more at trial, then they will not recover attorney's fees and costs from the date that the offer was made. So that is a critical tool for defendants. And finally, there was a recent study that the New York Times published that found, quote, "Most plaintiffs who decided to pass up a settlement offer and went to trial ended up getting less money than if they had taken the offer," unquote. And so plaintiffs risk not valuing the case correctly and not taking what in reality is a reasonable settlement offer. Let's talk about some of the pressure points on police officers and municipalities, the defendants in these cases. The first one, and the most critical one, is the attorney's fees provision under 42 U.S.C. 1988 that allows a prevailing civil rights plaintiff to recover attorney's fees. And this, in theory, incentivizes lawyers to take these cases. What it does in a practical effect is make the case more valuable as the case goes along. Because the attorney's fees increase as the case goes along, and so the risk can be elevated the further the case goes. Another consideration is creating bad law. Because police officers are repeat players in police agencies, a ruling in one case can have the effect of satisfying that qualified immunity standard and clearly establishing a constitutional violation for another case down the road. A third factor for defendants is that fact issues can preclude summary judgment. And this can often happen if you have different versions of events recited by different witnesses. And it can, in a way, potentially force police officers and agencies to go to trial. The critical point on that is that a fact issue can preclude a ruling on qualified immunity. However, the police officer or entity can preserve that and have the jury find facts and then seek a ruling on qualified immunity based on the facts that the jury finds. So qualified immunity can still be at play in trial. Other factors include the morale of the police force. Is the case just a burden hanging around this officer and the other officers? And the morale of the community. Many times, and we've seen this increasingly, that uses of force and seizures are more heavily publicized. They are often lightning rods in the community, and we've seen that throughout the United States. And settlement to buy peace in the community and heal community wounds can also be an option that one might want to pursue. In conclusion, mediation in civil rights cases is very complex. It's emotionally charged. There are different procedural defenses, legal defenses, and procedural hurdles that often come into play. And these should be considered by all sides, as well as the mediator. If you have questions about civil rights cases, valuations, mediations, strategies in mediations, I'd be more than happy to help with those. Please feel free to just shoot me an email or give me a call. My email address is sy@scmlaw. And thank you for sitting in on this week's Snow Christensen and Martineau's Counselor's Corner.
Thank you for coming to the Snow Christensen Martineau Counselor's Corner. Please join us next time.